I want to remind you that we're asking the question, what is so good about Good Friday? And I want you again to imagine that you're there. I want you to imagine that you're not a modern day Christian, but you're a first century follower of Christ, disciple of Christ, who is in utter confusion about what is going on. I think if we could have been there, I don't think there is a scenario where we would have thought that years later people would say Good Friday. I just don't think that would have been in my mindset. I kind of hope it would, but I think the reality of seeing what was taking place just wouldn't even be able to comprehend. How do you call this day good? How is that possible? How did the betrayal of Jesus become good? How did the torture of Jesus become good? The mocking of Jesus. How did the death of Jesus become good? But here we are. It's good. You know, sometime before Friday, a soldier, he prepared three trees to become a cross. And don't mistake it, he was not thinking of something that people would smile about later. No, this was an instrument of death. It was execution. And as the soldier was preparing it, he was probably indifferent to what was about to happen. And in all honesty, Jesus wasn't even on the grid. You see, there were three prisoners in a Roman prison that were to be crucified. And so his prepping of the cross was for those three prisoners. It was just straightforward. It was a regular day. He didn't expect much. And so he just began to prepare. I wonder, in that time, were they already prepared? Were they ready to go? Or were each prepared for a specific purpose? I wonder if the soldier was thinking about Barabbas. I wonder if the soldier was thinking about the two thieves. I wonder if he even knew their names. We only know the name of Barabbas. Here in today, when we see a cross, we smile because it means something different to us. How did that happen? How did it get reversed from something that was an instrument of execution to something that we call good? How did it go from death to life? There was a turning point in the upper room. If you read the story as Luke records it, when it first happened, we find this kind of turning point. Luke chapter 22, verses 20 through 23, this is where Paul was quoting from earlier. Remember, Paul wasn't there. He wasn't in the upper room. But he knew this story. He walked with the guys that were in the room. And it said, this cup, talking about what Jesus said, this cup is the new covenant in my blood, which is poured out for you. But then Luke says this happened. He goes, But look, the hand of the one betraying me is at the table with me. You see, right there, I think, is where the disciples really knew something was about to go down. I think it was at that moment that they knew everything was going to change. Verse 23 says they began to argue among themselves about which one of them it could be and who was going to do it. And so the disciples are arguing up in the upper room. I don't know about you, but when I see the pictures of the Last Supper, it all looks kind of peaceful to me. But they're arguing because they just found out that one of them are going to betray Jesus. While the disciples are arguing, Judas gets up to leave. And the disciples don't realize why he's leaving. Jesus knows, but the disciples don't know. Jesus simply says to him, he goes, "Go do whatever it is you got to do." And probably the disciples just thought he had something to do with money or something like that. And so they kind of let the whole thing go. But Jesus, he knew exactly what was about to happen. Now, we all know the story of Jesus going into the garden. It's about 2 a.m. We're up to the day we call Good Friday. The betrayal is happening on Good Friday. In my mind, I kind of stretch it out over a couple days because it seems like it would take a couple days for a betrayal, a trial, and a murder to happen. But it actually all happens in a couple hours. It doesn't take long at all. They all take a walk to the garden, and it's probably about 2 a.m. at this point on what we call Good Friday. And you remember Jesus, remember his prayer? He said, "Father, if there's any way, if any other way, take this cup from me." Jesus, he knew what this cross meant. He knew the reality of it. He knew what was about to happen. He knew it had to happen. Sometimes I think that prayer is for you and me, just to remember what really had to take place that day. Right after Jesus prays that prayer, he walks over to the disciples, and they fell asleep. He had asked them to pray, but they fell asleep. He walks up to them, and he says, why are you sleeping? You know, come on, guys, why are y'all sleeping? And he tells them to get up and pray so that you'll not be caught in temptation. Then about that time, here comes Judas with the mob. And he's being betrayed. And now we're still at like 2 o'clock in the morning. So about 2 a.m., Jesus is arrested. This doesn't take long. While Jesus was speaking and they came up, remember how Judas betrayed him? He identified Jesus with a kiss. In Luke 22:48 says, "Judas, are you betraying the Son of Man with a kiss?" then a lot of things take place in that moment. And it's about 6 a.m. and we have a trial by the Jewish leaders. You'd think that trial would take a little while. It only took about 30 minutes. That's my guesstimate, but what I can tell you is that Jesus was on the cross by 9 a.m. All Friday morning, betrayal to arrest, and then to trial. And so Jesus' first trial, it was by the Jewish leaders. They declared him guilty of treason. They handed him over to Pilate and Herod. Pilate's the Roman governor. He's the one that would decide who can and cannot be murdered on the cross. He decides who can execute. That was his role. He determined that Jesus was not guilty. And so you'll remember, we're at the Passover time, and so Herod was in town. Herod is the local ruler from Jesus' hometown, Galilee. And so he tries to pass it off to Herod. Herod, he actually mocks the whole thing. And really, so does Pilate. They both sort of mock the whole thing. But at the end of the day, they couldn't find a reason to charge Jesus. They couldn't find it. And so they figured out a plan. They said, you know what? On Passover, it's customary that we let one of the prisoners go. And so, maybe you know the story, they brought out the most vile criminal that we no doubt would call a terrorist to put him up against Jesus and give the crowd a choice. Do you want to let Barabbas go or Jesus go? The biblical term they used was rebel for Barabbas. The crowd, to their surprise, they wanted Jesus to be crucified. And you have to admit, there's people in this crowd that just a few days ago on Palm Sunday are waving palm leaves. They're praising Jesus. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. What changed? And why is Jesus standing for this? Luke 23:21 says the crowd, again, certainly many who were praising his name days ago, they yelled, crucify him, crucify him. And so Jesus took the place of Barabbas. And the story of Barabbas was reversed. You see, Barabbas was supposed to die that day. He had been in prison for a long time. This was scheduled. But Jesus took his place. You remember when Jesus was carrying the crossbeam? And the soldiers stop and they get Simeon because Jesus can't take it. The things that have happened to this point, Jesus has been, he has been beaten, he has been tortured, he has been everything. And now the tradition is you carry the cross beam to the cross. He couldn't do it. Simeon was told to carry the beam for Jesus. And so Simeon carries the beam. Simeon's not a Jew. It's kind of ironic that Simeon carried, he lifted the burden off of Jesus. And you remember when Jesus told his followers, he said, if you want to come after me, if you want to follow me, You got to deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow me. It's just kind of interesting symbolism that Simeon carried that cross. We could spend days talking about that. I wonder if that even made sense for people. Because if you think about it, when we read that, we know Jesus was crucified. We know he was on a cross. In fact, we already have the image of the pretty cross. Jesus hadn't reversed the imagery yet. He hadn't reversed it to where this is life, not death. It was still an instrument of death. And yet, strangely, he said, you got to take up your cross and follow me. That meant a lot. Because if you think about it, what I'm doing now in modern day, it would be like a chemist preparing the chemicals. It would be like a guard preparing the chair, getting the straps ready. And we would never call that good. We just wouldn't. It was about 9 a.m. when Jesus was nailed to the cross. 9 a.m., think about that. About 2 a.m., they're praying. And then he's arrested. A trial takes place, really kind of two trials, all the way to 6 a.m. And the interesting thing is, if you study Roman crucifixions, Roman trials, it was a sham trial. You actually can't do something that fast. You have to give some kind of process, some kind of due process, but they didn't. They rushed it forward. In fact, it just fulfills prophecy is what happened. And it's kind of amazing how all that happens. grab from that side. You'll grab that one. Guys, while they were on the cross, there were two criminals. We don't know their names. We call one the repentant thief and one the unrepentant thief. The unrepentant thief, he told Jesus in Luke 23, verse 39, he said, "Aren't you the Messiah? Save us and yourself." The second thief, criminal, he was repentant. He said, "Don't you fear God? We are punished justly, but this man has done nothing wrong." And then he turned to Jesus and he said, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." And he says, "Truly I tell you, today," Jesus talking, "today you will be with me in paradise." Each of us have two possible responses to Christ. It's either you reject him or you believe in him. My prayer is that you believe. It's kind of ironic because each of us are going to spend eternity like one thief or the other. If you're like the unrepentant thief, I can only tell you you're going to be in the place that he will be, but you'll never meet him. You'll be separated. That won't be that big of a deal, but the separation is from others, but the real separation is that when we don't believe, when we don't accept this sacrifice as atonement for our own sins, the penalty is separation from God. That's what makes hell hell, is that we're separated from God. The repentant thief, man, he prayed a simple prayer, about as simple as they get. "Remember me when you come into your kingdom." Verse 42, that is all of this wrapped up in one request, because this is a love story to you. The Old Testament is the promises that were made to you. The New Testament are the promises fulfilled to you. And we get caught up in all little things, and we treat the Bible like a mystery book. It's not a mystery book. God has revealed everything that he wants to reveal to me and you. And what he has revealed is his story. Is that this was predicted thousands of years earlier, as Pastor Adam read, by the prophet Isaiah. And then it was fulfilled. We get to learn a lot of little things in between. But everything in that book is a love letter to you and to me, so that we could believe in him, love him, and have relationship with him. I hope that you will choose belief. I hope that you will choose relationship. Otherwise, everything Jesus did here, it doesn't count for you. It becomes almost a mockery in many ways. Death is what we all deserve. And yet the repentant thief, in the last moments of his life, reached out to Jesus, and Jesus reversed his destiny. Jesus declared him righteous, and his punishment was reversed, because that thief's punishment was not the cross. The thief's punishment was separation. And the thief began to understand and know that. It was about noon the same day. Again, all this has taken place. The sky went dark. All the crowd scattered. Even the disciples are, you know, they're in disbelief because what they thought was going to be this beautiful, beautiful thing of Jesus the King, Jesus the Messiah, it ended up like this. And they didn't understand. About noon, probably the most frightening thing is that the Son of God, he went silent. And we think it was about noon that Jesus died. It looked like the enemy had won. If you've remained in the mindset of a first century disciple, and you look at this, it just looks like the enemy won. To anyone watching, it all seemed finished. You see, a movement was crushed, a king was condemned, and a savior, he was defeated. All that. But behind the scenes, God was doing something bigger. You see, God was reversing all this. He was making death and turning it into life. What looked like a loss was actually victory. What looked like Satan's triumph and Satan's win, his plan, it looked like he won. It looked like he defeated Jesus. What looked like the end was just the beginning of what Jesus had done. Colossians 2:14 says this, great verse, he canceled the record of the charges against us and took it away by nailing it to the cross. Because you see, what looked like a defeat was Jesus reversing the curse of sin. Good Friday. How can one describe such a day? The wrongdoing of all humanity, putting to an end an innocent man, the Son of God. This is the story of Jesus, death by way of a cross. All in one moment, bringing death to the bright light of our future. He never stopped loving us, and yet this is the incredible part of it. Our sin stopped his heart. Our sin drove the nails firmly in the hands of God. All along, these were the plans. We told ourselves that we were in control, and this was deemed sufficient for all of us. The brutal beating, the inhuman flogging, the naked humiliation, heaven watched and saw it all. Our rebellion, our guilt, and our shame, erasing the very notion of us reconciling with God. Our sin, our debt, overcoming Jesus. Here is our King, obliterated, the enemy laughing. His plans unstoppable. There's no longer the sound of freedom rising. Now God's people are utterly broken. Behold, the chains of mortality. Yes, this is what is true. We had heard the stories of old. The lost are found, the blind can see, the weak are made strong. But now we are witnesses to this reality. God is dead. We had almost believed there is a way of redemption. There's a life of fulfillment. There's a peace beyond understanding. But now we know better. For us, we can say that God is encapsulated in this one realization that the single greatest sacrifice in human history is finished. How clearly we can see it. So what's so good about Good Friday? Just one thing, that the blood of Jesus can reverse the curse of sin and raise the dead to life.
How clearly we can see it is finished. The single greatest sacrifice in human history encapsulated in this one realization. We can say that God is for us. Now we know better. There is a peace beyond understanding. There is a life of fulfillment. There is a way of redemption. We had almost believed God is dead. But now we are witnesses to this reality. The weak are made strong. The blind can see. The lost are found. We had heard the stories of old. Yes, this is what is true. The chains of mortality utterly broken. Behold, freedom rising. Now God's people are unstoppable. There's no longer the sound of the enemy laughing. His plans obliterated. Here is our King Jesus overcoming our sin and our debt, reconciling us with God. This is the very notion of our rebellion, our guilt, our shame. Heaven watched and saw it all. The naked humiliation, the inhuman flogging, the brutal beating, and this was deemed sufficient for all of us. We told ourselves that we were in control. All along, these were the plans firmly in the hands of God. Our sin drove the nails, our sin stopped his heart, and yet this is the incredible part of it. He never stopped loving us. The bright light of our future, all in one moment, bringing death to death by way of a cross. This is the story of Jesus, the Son of God, an innocent man putting to an end the wrongdoing of all humanity. How can one describe such a day? Good Friday. Jesus paid it all to him I owe. Sin had left a crimson stain, he washed it white as snow. Jesus paid it all.